This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, we'll hear from Michigan Campaign Finance Network Director Rich Robinson with the latest numbers on how much money lobbyists are spending to try and influence state lawmakers. But first, the story of Merz Tate. She was one of the first African-American female distinguished alumni at what is now Western Michigan University. She went on to become the first African-American to graduate from Oxford. Tate had a career as a teacher and history professor. She traveled the world and served as a correspondent for an African-American newspaper based in Baltimore. Journalist Sonia Bernard Hollins is the editor of Community Voices magazine and has written extensively about Merz Tate. Hollins' new book will come out in March. It's called The World Through the Lens of Merz Tate. WMUK's Rebecca Thiel spoke with Sonia Bernard Hollins.
So, Sonia, can you tell us about when and why you really got interested in Merz Tate?
Well, you know, it was something that kind of happened, and I never could shake her name. I heard her name, and I never could let it go. I was a reporter at the Kalamazoo Gazette, and anyone who knows me knows I love history. Any way I can put history into a story, you know, I'll do it. My editors would say, we don't need to know the history of that. Just write the story. It's like, but this is so interesting. And so I was writing a series on history in the community, and one of the stories I did was on the first African-Americans of Western Michigan University. And so I received a list from the alumni department, and I said, you have, you know, just name all the first African-Americans who did anything who were Western alumni. Just give me a list of that. And so they produced this list, and it had, you know, people like Merz Tate on there. And, you know, so you look through the list, and you see these names, and hers just happened to stick. I had never heard her name. And so, you know, I called Sharon Carlson at the archives, and I said, have you ever heard of this Merz Tate woman? She's on the list of being the first African-American female distinguished alumni at Western. What made her so special? I don't know anything about her. And she said, well, first of all, Merz left over $1 million to Western. I was like, oh, really? So what did she do? She said, well, she was a history professor. And I was like, and she left over $1 million to Western? Like, where did she get the money? She's like, well, you know, actually, when she died, her scrapbooks were left to Western. If you want, you can come to the archives and look through them. People have never really looked through them, but you're welcome to come take a look. And so there were these three boxes, and Sharon presented them to me and had my little gloves on. And I opened the box, and it was like a hidden treasure of just everything any historian or journalist would ever want to see. And one of the first things I saw was a ticket to the 32 Olympics in Los Angeles, where Merz had attended. There was a graduation certificate from Oxford University, where she was the first African-American to graduate from there in 1935. There were scrapbooks of pictures from around the world that she had taken. And it was like, who is this woman? There was a letter from Mary McLeod Bethune asking her to meet with Eleanor Roosevelt and some other women at the White House. And there was this ticket to the White House for this event. And I'm thinking, I know Mary McLeod Bethune. I've never heard of Merz Tate. And she was just a history professor. It has to be more to her than this, with all these things that I'm finding in these boxes. And so, you know, at first it was overwhelming. I didn't know, you know, what to do with the information. And I wrote the article for the Inquirer, basically saying that she was the first African-American to graduate from Oxford University and the first African-American female to receive a PhD in political science from Radcliffe College and Harvard University. She was a Fulbright scholar in India. She spoke 5 languages. She was a Blanchard, Michigan native and grew up up in Mecosta County. Her family were the first Negro settlers of Mecosta County. They were pioneers who were formerly Underground Railroad conductors in Ohio who came to Michigan through the Homestead Act to settle land and resettle in Michigan. So, I mean, her family history alone was amazing, but then to learn about the things that she had done was even more amazing. And for her to be born, you know, in 1905 and do the things that she did was amazing to me. Here's this woman who I'd never heard of from my own home state who's done these incredible things, and I've never even heard of her. Not even in the history books, I hadn't heard of her anywhere.
Now let's talk about her early life. You know, what was it like for her growing up? And did her parents really encourage her to achieve this? Or, you know, was that kind of a confidence she found on her own?
You know, you think about her family being Underground Railroad conductors, you know, so they already had a sense of pride, you know, about themselves. They had a sense of independence. They had a sense of showing other people that there's a different way, that, you know, you can be free, you can, you know, do things. So her family had that mentality that don't feel you have to be a certain thing or be in a certain spot. You can do whatever you want. You can go wherever you want. So even though they were farmers, you know, in Blanchard, Michigan, like I said, they were part of the first Negro settlers, you know, she had a mind to say, I don't just have to be here. My family moved, you know, to find a better life in a place that wasn't even settled. You know, why can't I visit other places that are already settled, you know, and find my way? They, you know, she said in her some of her writings that when she walked her 4 miles to school every day, I hear longer and longer versions of how long she walked to school as I talk to more people, but it started off as 3 miles and, you know, it's 4 miles to school each way, that she would read her geography books and she would read her history books and she would memorize the Gettysburg Address and she would envision her places that she saw in the geography books and said, I want to visit all those places one day. One day I want to visit all of those places. And so in her mind as a child, you know, she marinated on the fact that, you know, I want to do these things. These are things that I want to visit and see one day. Her parents weren't travelers. They were farmers, you know, and they hadn't traveled outside of her hometown as far as, you know, really before her travels. And she would invite them places. Her parents were divorced when she grew up. So they had split the farm in half and the father stayed on one area of the land and the mother stayed on the other area. So, you know, her parents didn't get along. So, you know, that relationship was kind of interesting. She actually went to school. Her first elementary school was in the land behind her mother's property that her mother had donated to the county to start an elementary school. So she would basically walk, you know, across the fields to get to her first elementary school when she was a young kid. And her mother taught her how to read and the importance of education. So education was always deep, you know, in her. The traveling was something, I think, through her history books and geography that it just, you know, kind of came to her and said, I want to do those things one day. When her school burnt down in Blanchard High School when she was in 10th grade, all the kids were graduated because they had to build a new school. And they were like, okay, you're graduated. And MERS, the youngest student, was the valedictorian, 10th grade. And she didn't stop there. She wanted more. She wanted to attend college. So she moved to Battle Creek, where she didn't know anyone, and worked as a maid on a home for her room and board. And, you know, think about a 16-year-old, you know, student, you know, 15, 16, leaving everything she knew just from someone referring. Well, I know someone who lives in Battle Creek who said you can live in their home and pay a room and board if you go to school there. And for her to say, okay. And she did it and received all A's, you know, while she was there. And even won the Hinman Oratorical Contest, a $50 gold coin when she was in 11th grade, she won. So her mind was always on, you know, the next level. What can I do? What else can I do?
Was that why she was so into travel, because of her history books? Or, you know, why was she not into, you know, historical homes, for example? You know, why traveling?
Right. I think, you know, from her writings, she said she always wanted to be at the places that she saw in those history books. So it was fascinating to see the pyramids of Egypt. You know, I want to be there. You know, so she has pictures of her there. The Taj Mahal, you hear the stories. She has photos of her there. You know, so I think she heard these stories of these, you know, amazing places. And she was like, I want to see that. You know, I want to see the Great Wall of China. I want to, you know, see those things that, you know, you read about or hear about in the history books. And that was just a fascination, of, you know, for her to be in all those places that were in those books.
Now, you know, we hear a lot about what MERS Tate has accomplished and things like that. But we don't hear as much about what she faced to accomplish those things. You know, when she was at Oxford, was that a difficult situation?
You know, we interviewed one of the historians at Oxford when our travel club girls, we Skyped in the historian from Oxford University, and the girls asked him about that. And he said that there wasn't an issue so much with race at Oxford because most of the students were from all over the world. There were students from India, there were students from Africa who were attending Oxford. So they were used to that melting pot type of atmosphere. But, you know, you still think those were the times where there may have been some issues. Looking back at MERS's writing, she stressed that race was not always her biggest obstacle. It was being a female. Being a female was her biggest obstacle. When she went on to work at Howard University, she was the first African-American woman hired in their history department. And she retired from there and never was considered to be dean, never given the opportunity to be chair of the history department, and she had written, you know, award-winning history books and had done international research. Was a Fulbright scholar. They promoted men who were in her class to chair the history department before they even would allow her the opportunity. So, and she had written about, you know, it was the men who constantly were holding back and pushing against her. Even being a single woman, you know, not married, without children, she had the opportunity to do things that even some men didn't even do. And she said that there were a lot of resent by some of her own coworkers of some of the things that she had done. And they made it very hard and difficult for her. There was one student from Howard that I interviewed who remembers one of the professors, male professors, coming in and just looking at MERS, just staring at her, and MERS left in tears because some of the men would just intimidate her. And, you know, she would have to be, you know, strong for her students, but it was at this one particular time where she received an award that this one professor thought he should have received, and he just made her life difficult. So, you know, she was like, it wasn't the racism that was her issue. It was the issue of being a woman. Even some of the places that she traveled, they looked at her more as a woman first instead of a professor, you know, or someone who knows five languages and is an expert in disarmament. And they like, okay, you're a woman first. Then, okay, these are the things that you can do. So that was what she really stressed out more on, was the fact that she was this independent woman in this era where most women were seen as being, you know, housewives and mothers and not traveling around the world. So
I heard that when she was traveling, because so many different places were so many much more accepting, mm-hmm. of, you know, different races, different
exactly.
cultures, she was able to kind of find wonderful people who accepted her for the accomplished woman that
exactly.
she was.
Exactly. I mean, for to see the images that she's taken pictures of, you know, she followed around the first prime minister of India, Nehru. She has photographs like she was a media person for the day, just following him around in his military entourage. He saw her and respected her, you know, as this African-American, you know, woman who was intelligent, who was interested in his story and following him around. She was so smart that because she was overseas so much, she went to the African-American newspaper in Baltimore and asked, could she be their overseas correspondent? So that allowed her to have a press card. So wherever she went around the world, she could always get in someplace as media as well. So when she followed Prime Minister Nehru around, she followed him around for an expose for the African-American newspaper. So she took the photos and wrote an article about him and what was going on in India and all those things. So she was very smart in realizing that there may be some things that hold her back in the United States, you know, as an African-American. But like you said, the world is open and to what people have just based on their skills and their level of what they can bring to it. And these people around the world loved her for what she could bring. I mean, she lectured around the world and people would bring her in to advise her. She was expert in disarmament. So she counseled heads of states, leaders of different countries on nuclear weapons. This is during the 40s and 50s, you know, and to think we've never heard of her here in the United States. But there are history books that, you know, she has written based on her knowledge in, you know, in disarmament and in the history of those countries. And because they looked at her as a professional and a person who was an expert in her field. And she, like I said, she spoke languages and she was able to relate. So people respected her for that.
And, you know, what's next for you in terms of MERS Tate, in terms of any other great Michigan notables?
Right. Or unnotables who will become notable. You know, that's my dream. After I, you know, complete MERS's story, there are a lot of professors around the country now who are writing books on MERS in different aspects of her political involvements and different things like that. So, you know, to me, to be able to share stories like MERS and to inspire other people to say, what more can we learn about these people? What more can we write and share? I think that is something that I would love to do. There's a park in Vandalia named Dr. Lawless Park, and no one really knew he was an African-American who left all these hundreds of acres to this community. He was one of the first black doctors to buy land in the Vandalia area. There were three black doctors who bought land there, Dr. Green, Dr. Gray, and Dr. Lawless. There were doctors from Chicago who bought land in Michigan to create an African-American resort area. And not many people knew about these guys who bought this land, but the Lawless Park is the land that he donated to that community. He never married or had children either. And he was a nationally known dermatologist. And this was an African-American guy. You know, so you know, it would be my vision to share all of these stories of these different people in our communities, particularly African-American people in Michigan. There are so many stories I've found. So many. MERS is just the one that, you know, stands out now. But, you know, I hope that these other people will get their highlight in their day soon as well.
And when is the book coming out?
The book will be released in March, this March for Women's History Month. So it's The World Through the Lens of MERS Tate. And it's a photo biography of her. So it has a lot of the photos. Even my 60-piece exhibit travels around, but there are hundreds and hundreds of photos that she has taken. These are her own photos. That she's left to not only Western, but other universities around the country as well.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to that.
Thank you.
Sonia Bernard-Hollins, editor of Community Voices magazine and also award-winning journalist. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Sonia Bernard-Hollins' book, The World Through the Lens of MERS Tate, will be released in March. She spoke with WMUK's Rebecca Thiel. Links with more information can be found at WMUK.org.